The agenda for today includes five confirmation items. The first person on the agenda is Ryan Bronson, citizen member of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and your thoughts on the council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Bronson. I'm a citizen member of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. I'm a resident of Eagan, Minnesota. I'm employed by Federal Premium Ammunition in Anoka. I'm the conservation specialist. My education, I'm a biologist by training. Graduated from Bemidji State University. Have worked for a number of conservation organizations, including the Minnesota Legislature on the Environment Natural Resource Finance Committee in the House back in the late 90s.
Great. So you were appointed to fill the spot of outgoing member Schroeder.
Correct.
All right. So tell us about your vision for the council.
Well, I think the direction that the council has set, establishing the direction they want to go, is actually a very good one. If you look at the long-term conservation needs of this state, water, fragmentation of our forests, loss of prairies are our biggest the biggest threats to the future of conservation in Minnesota. Those are areas that the council has prioritized, and I think they're heading in the right direction, and I intend to continue working in that direction with those priorities in mind.
Questions from the committee? Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bronson, one of the things that's starting to crop up is the blurred lines between the water quality portion of the legacy amendment and the outdoor portion of the amendment. Just wondering if you could explain what you think needs to happen for those funds.
Mr. Bronson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash. I think there's always going to be some overlap there because what's good for water quality to benefit people drinking water is also good for conservation. If you look at this, the constitutional language referring to the outdoor heritage portion, it really refers to habitat relating to game, wildlife, and fish. And so those priorities are water projects that primarily benefit habitat for those species that may have ancillary benefits for clean water certainly are appropriate to be funded by the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The clean water portion, I think there are a lot of projects that are out there that say primary benefit is flood mitigation or the primary benefit is clean water for drinking water. I think those are outside of the habitat benefit laid out by the Constitution, and I think those would be more appropriately funded by the clean water portion. There's a lot of projects that are going to be gray area, and I think coordination between the different entities that spend that money is going to be extremely important so we don't have needs that are not being met because everyone is pointing the finger at someone else to do it, but also that we're not overemphasizing projects trying to spend two pots of money on the same project. I think that's inefficient for the taxpayers of Minnesota. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bronson, that's kind of what I'm hearing is that there are projects that benefit both habitat and water, and it seems to be that some of the dialogue going is that, well, it's a habitat. The outdoor heritage should be paying for that, or vice versa. Now it's really a water project, and what I'm hoping that we can get these things together and that the board and that your membership on that board is going to encourage overlapping collaboration partnerships, etc., with that. And so that's one of the reasons I asked the question. And the other one is heritage preservation and involves a lot of things. Some of it's purchasing land, but I'm really concerned about jobs in Minnesota right now. And my preference is that the Heritage Council looks at those things they can do to get people to work that still, in you know, improve the sustainability for wildlife and game and fish. And so I'm not sure what your what you think about that idea at this point in time. In the
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kilosh, I think that the outdoor heritage portion is clearly the emphasis should be on habitat for the conservation benefits, and not the primary driver should be jobs. That being said, a number of the projects that we looked at this past year and funded require, anytime you do habitat improvement, that requires boots on the ground, people, mm-hmm. whether they be state employees or with the nonprofits, with Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, or many of the private for-profit businesses that engage in that work. Those are jobs that are primarily in rural places in the state that are in need of employment as well. They are good jobs for folks like with backgrounds like mine who went to school to be in conservation, natural resources. Those are the kinds of jobs that we always thought we'd be doing, and that aren't always available. So burn crews, people that are out there planting, people running bulldozers to do water impoundments and to do wetland restoration. Those are boots on the ground, and those are people, and those are jobs. And I think there's definitely those benefits. My priority, at least in the short term, I think there was a lot of acquisition dollars in the projects recommended. One of the things is, if we look at this, is if we only have 25 years to work with this pot of money, which is what the voters have initially given us, they're not making any more land, and so land is getting more expensive. So making key acquisitions to add to our wildlife management areas, our waterfowl production areas, are certainly of benefit now, and there's always going to be ongoing maintenance required to keep habitat in the condition that's going to be optimal for wildlife. So I think there will be jobs connected to these projects now and also down the road.
Okay. You have to have land acquired in order to restore it. And also acquiring land also entails jobs as well. It's a misnomer. Senator Kilosh.
Last question. And that has to do with metro versus rural. And that with habitat, I keep hearing that there's a lot of endangered habitat out in rural Minnesota. But there's also a lot in the metro area that's where there's development infringing on good wetlands, fens, etc., that I guess I would like to make sure that the Heritage Foundation is also looking at those. And, you know, the wildlife includes birds, etc., and fish is, there's also a lot of metro area lakes. So I'm concerned that all that habitat money is going outside the metro area when there's a significant need to be able to help preserve those for the metro cities and park boards, etc.
Mr. Bronson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kilosh, I would agree that there is some very important habitat in the metro area. I think if you look at the projects that were funded here in this, that were recommended for funding, they haven't been funded. The legislature gets to do that. That have been recommended for funding. The projects in Anoka County relating to the Oak Savannas, the acquisition of the confluence of the Rum River and Cedar Creek, the projects that are taking place, particularly in relation to the Vermilion River in Washington and Dakota County, and also a number of trout stream habitats in Washington County. Those are worthy projects that received recommendations. Long term, there is that component that requires that there be public access open to hunting as well. And in the metro area, that's difficult. And then it also comes down to the fact protecting these properties in the metro area are much more expensive, and for a greater overall conservation benefit, they really need to be weighed against what we can accomplish in places where habitat's a little more affordable.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bronson,
that
one of the things is that, yes, it is more expensive. But it's also critical habitat to maintain in the area for the, you know, boots on the ground and having access to it. There's excellent access in the metro area, of course, for most of the set land set aside for conservation. But the requirement of being able to hunt on every piece of land that the Heritage Council is deemed worthy does not seem like it fits exactly in the legacy fund. It is not just a hunting bill. It is also a wildlife bill, and it's also a fisheries bill. So, I mean, that requirement that we be able to hunt on the land and using that to exclude any metro area set-asides just is not consistent with the legacy as far as I can see. So I'm hoping that we start getting that mindset that the people that are supplying the funding for this, most of them are living in the metro area, and they do have needs, and they don't all go hunting up north. Some of them stay here and enjoy the parks and wildlife here, and enhancing those is part of that wildlife, I believe, and preservation of the land for enjoyment of wildlife, et cetera, is part of this legacy fund.
And yet when we see opportunities to protect areas within the metro area, legislators, on balance, opt for developing them. So we also have to be supportive of conserving these lands. And by the way, there's no reason why you can't hunt in the metro area if the proper settings are there, and you can. Mm-hmm. You can hunt Carlos Avery. You know, we had this whole to-do with the Lamprey Pass, and someone wanted to sell. They wanted to sell their land to the DNR. And we had a bill to allow them to do it, but it didn't pass. So we also need to be supportive, and this isn't the only fund as well,
right,
that is responsible for that. I think the point about the expense is important, not that it should bar that activity, but when we see that issue of metro land being more expensive needs us to have a very critical eye when we look at the number of projects or the amount of money that is spent on balance in any legacy bill or any council recommendation. We can't just say, well, there's all these projects in rural areas and only a few in the metro. Well, we have to understand that it does cost more in the metro. So I support the council's ongoing recommendations of conservation activities in the metro. I think that's critical. But we also got to give them a little bit of slack that it's hard to pay for them.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I agree.
I tell you what, if we can help them,
with
our bonding bill, which we didn't do this year,
agree.
I think we can get to your concern a lot better.
And I agree, and I'm looking at it as a partnership or whatever, but part of it is because it's so expensive, it's much more difficult to save fens, et cetera, in the metro area, and it is more expensive, but there's also greater access for a greater number of people and all of that.
Fair enough.
All of that. So that's part of my concern, and I want to just make sure that we are giving the metro and its habitat a fair shake in all of this. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And the access to taking of game and fish is specifically in the amendment. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of interpretation. Senator Fredrickson and then Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bronson, your task on the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council is to make recommendations to the legislature on how to spend the one-third of the heritage money for habitat. The Clean Water Council gives us recommendations on how to spend money from the water portion of that constitutional amendment. And then we have a third constitutional amendment, too, the Environmental Trust Fund. And we get recommendations from the Legislative Assistance Commission for Minnesota Resources for that. How do you see the relationship between those three entities? You know, how do you see them working together and not perhaps infringing on the other responsibilities?
Mr. Bronson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, thank you for that question. I think if we look long term, the natural tendency for those three entities are going to be to get in their own silos and try to do their own thing, and I think that will be to the detriment of the taxpayers in Minnesota. Certainly the Environmental Trust Fund has a broader range of projects that it's allowed to fund. I think at the time when the Environmental Trust Fund came to be, it felt fairly restrictive in the environmental projects, but I think the one-third that the Heritage Council looks at is more restricted in that the Constitution clearly says it's for habitat to the prairies, wetlands, and forests that benefit fish, game, and wildlife. So the environmental education components, which I'm a big supporter of, I've served on an outdoor education task force that the chairman was integral in integrating last year through the DNR. I think that's important, but I don't think the funding, for instance, should come from the Outdoor Heritage Council. The Environmental Trust Fund is the appropriate location for those kinds of projects, educational projects. I really think that the way that I understand the constitutional amendment to read, the way that I understand it, my interpretation, is that it really is a habitat project. And so those projects that our council works on should be habitat-based. That being said, I hope going forward that the entities that are making recommendations on these funding proposals sit down and work together prior to making their recommendations and try to figure out what projects are of mutual benefit that we should be sharing and which projects are off the table for one group or another that the other groups can then fund. If we silo up, we're going to have three sources of funding that are going to be inefficient, and conservation and the environment is too important for the next 25 years to waste our opportunities not working together. So I look forward to working with the Legislative Commission, Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources and the Water Council as well.
Senator Dilden Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bronson, I am impressed with the long list of organizations you belong to. There's 16 of them on the list, hunting and various wildlife organizations. I'm just a little curious, how much money do you spend annually on these memberships?
Bronson.
Mr. Chairman, my wife just walked in the room. I'd rather not answer that question. I'm a life member of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, so I don't have to pay anything annually anymore. The rest of the groups, they're all about $30 to $40 for memberships. And also, in my role as a conservation manager at Federal Cartridge, a lot of those memberships are also paid for by my company because that's part of my job. I work with these groups all the time. But out of my own pocket for conservation, I spend in the thousands of dollars every year.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say first that Mr. Bronson, when did you start serving and coming to council meetings? I can't remember exactly when it took effect.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, just before Christmas. It was in December. I wasn't in the first cut of recommendations, but after that I was involved in the recommendation process.
And Mr. Chair, as a member of the council, I just want to acknowledge that Mr. Bronson, with his great amount of knowledge and background, you've really contributed a lot in a really short time. I thought it was a short time, and because of his knowledge and expertise in these areas, it's been good to have you there. And I was impressed at how quickly you engaged in the discussion. You no learning curve, and so I appreciate that. I want to ask you kind of a hot button question, I guess, if I can say this in a polite way or in a non-controversial way. I've been really distressed at this conflict that's going on between members of the House and members of the outdoors community and the press in some cases about what are the definitions of protect, restore, and enhance. My personal view is that it's ridiculous to be fighting over this, and that if everybody got in a room and talked it over, we'd probably agree on 90% of what we're talking about, and that there should be common ground. But I might be wrong. I might be naive to say that, and so I just want to throw that out to you. I think, as a biologist with your science background and your conservation experience and expertise, you understand that a fish or a deer or any kind of a critter exists in an ecosystem, and that they don't exist outside, you know, independent or exclusive of the ecosystem, which is the web of all the flora and fauna and all the parts of that interconnected web. I mean, that's how scientists in modern times view fish, game, and wildlife as part of an ecosystem. And so I'm not sure, I don't understand why we can't find common ground on that issue. And I'm not saying that what the House wrote down is the right way to do it or what the council wrote down. I just think that maybe there's, maybe if we could find a common understanding of these issues, that would be a first step, and then, you know, sort of how we define it on paper would follow that more easily.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, you're certainly correct that there is some conflict there, and I think it arises from a couple of things. I think the outdoor groups, primarily the hunting groups, are a little distrustful of the nature in which the definitions were put into law last year, kind of 11th hour. So I think there, I think that's the nature of their conflict. Honestly, when I look at the some of the language that's floating around there, I don't think it's terribly different. I don't view thinking of things in ecological terms as being a bad thing or necessarily a diversion from what the Outdoor Heritage Fund was intended. You're absolutely right. Everything exists in an ecosystem. Traditionally, wildlife management has focused on those species of most economic value, game species and others. And if you look at the backbone of conservation in the country, it's funded. The Pittman-Robertson tax, which was implemented in 1937, is a tax on guns and ammunition. It's being paid for, and that's really the heart of the federal funding that you'll be allocating this year to the DNR for wildlife management. License fees are certainly important. Back in the 80s and early 90s, the concept of ecological-based management kind of came out, and I remember Commissioner Sando way back when got beat up pretty bad for talking about ecological-based management. Some of the leadership in DNR now were some of the people beating up on him back then. But if you look at how the DNR leadership is operating now, they're operating using ecological-based management. You don't only manage the deer, you manage the habitat that supports the deer and the golden-winged warbler, another early successional species, and all the vast array of species that are there. And those habitat management techniques have to be balanced. We need old forests, we need young forests, we need middle forests, and to benefit a great number of species, game species and non-game species. Because the Constitution specifically addresses game and wildlife, I think there is an emphasis there that we should not lose sight of the fact that game animals have been the primary economic drivers for wildlife management, for forest management, for prairie management, for wetland management, and still continue to be the primary drivers of private funding through Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, and also through government revenues in license fees and others. So I don't think we want to lose sight of that fact. I'm not afraid of ecological-based management. I think it's good for ducks, deer, and pheasants. I think it's good for eagles and chickadees and loons as well. So I think I would like to see the conflict toned down. I've certainly not been involved in any of the mud throwing in this process. I think people are a little wound up. I think they're trying to keep themselves relevant after passing the constitutional amendment after so long. So I look forward to being one of those cooler heads that can sit down and come out with a solution to these definition conflicts.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Brunson, I appreciate that very much. I appreciate your answer. And Senator Saxhaug and I have been talking about this and seeing if we can try to find some common ground, and we'd be really happy to work with you on that. So thank you for that.
There was some common ground, a little bit of common ground found at the very end of last session, and it was inserted into the revisor's bill, which the House promised to pass. And the Senate passed the revisor's bill, and does anyone know if the House has passed that?
Mr. Chair.
Anderson?
I don't know about that. I think maybe just from my perspective, what happened was there was an effort to try to find some compromise language between the House and the Senate, and that's what made it in the bill at the last second. And it didn't have a chance to be vetted. But what's in the revisers bill is the same language adopted by the council. And so I don't think there's anything on paper that really represents common ground right now. I think you sort of have what the House wants, and then you have what the council wants. And I think we need to try to find the shared values that we have, because I think they really are pretty overwhelmingly unified for the most part.
Senator Sharon?
I'm sorry to be coming in a little late, but I would be interested in hearing you. You've been talking about this, obviously, but could you synthesize? It would be of interest to me in terms of this confirmation process to hear how you summarize your understanding of the conflict that we're talking about here. What is your articulation of what the issues are?
I think at the heart, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon, I think at the heart of the conflict, there's a distrust amongst sportsmen's groups of the process in which a definition was put into law last year, how it's different than what the Lessard Council. I think the sportsmen's groups have been very supportive of the Lessard Council and the process, and they don't want to see any of our recommendations change, and I think they think they're coming to our defense in some of their vociferousness. But at the heart of it is, I think sportsmen are concerned that by broadening the definition of what protect, enhance, and restore means, that money will be diverted away from projects on the ground that benefit game, fish, and wildlife. I think there's a lot of folks that are very concerned that if you broaden the interpretation too much, that we will start spending money on education programs and things that don't directly benefit habitat and access and hunting. I think that's where people's concerns are. And I don't necessarily think that there's a grand conspiracy there to take those things away from the sportsmen of the state. And so I look forward to working with both sides of the conflict and trying to come out with a good definition that everyone can live with and that will move us forward.
Just a follow-up question.
Just to add to that, there was extensive testimony that the definitions are not based on conservation practices. Senator Sharon, follow-up?
Would you say more about that, Senator, so I can understand? You've added that because you're emphasizing something. Could you help me understand that?
Let me just be very brief. The DNR testified that the definitions were not in concert with conservation practices. Having said that, we're going to have a deeper discussion about the definitions. When are we hearing Senator Saxon's bill? We're looking at Monday. And so we'll get into all those details so you can really understand. That's the upshot.
Thank you, because I have many people in my district who are very concerned about what we're talking about. And, of course, if you're on the Lessard Council, I would be concerned that you're not. If you are minimizing in some way the outdoors person's perspective and what they're as sort of hot, you know, hotheads or sort of not being vociferous, I'm just really believe that their energy and their passion is because of their commitment. And so I'd like to follow up with a question to say that you've articulated what their concern is by changing the language, that it would add things and diminish then what that money is for. Do you agree that the language would do that?
Bronson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I do not support the language that was implemented at the end of session last year adopting the House language. I think the original language was better. I think that the reviser bill would have taken care of most of those concerns. I do support essentially the Senate position on this issue from last year. That being said, I think elevating the conflict has been less than helpful in the process, and I think we could part of what makes me excited about the LaSard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council is that it's less political, at least not partisan. And I worry that as things become, as conflicts get cranked up, that we're going to become more partisan, with not Democrat, Republican, but just us versus them. And I don't think that's going to be helpful long term. But as far as do I support the sportsmen of the state, I think if you look at my resume, I think it's pretty clear that that's where I come from.
Any other comments? If they're not, we can take a motion.
Chairman, I would move that Mr. Bronson be recommended to the full Senate for confirmation.
On the motion, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
The next person on the confirmation agenda is Eric Tomlinson, citizen member of the Environmental Quality Board. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. And by the way, members, I want to comment that I think it's really good that we are asking sometimes tough questions. I've been on other committees in the Senate, and the confirmations are sometimes too cursory. So I really like what you all have been offering to this process. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators. My name is Eric Tomlinson. I am a citizen board member of the Environmental Quality Board.
Mr. Tomlinson, would you mind if Ms. Duncanson joined you at the table, because you're both being confirmed for the same board, and we've benefited from this in the past where two members can answer the same question so we don't have to repeat.
Sure.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Tomlinson, and proceed with your comments.
Right. I'm a hydrogeologist with an engineering firm, Short Elliott Hendrickson, in St. Paul. I have a bachelor's degree in geology with hydrogeology and water chemistry emphasis, and I was appointed to the board as a member with water resources experience.
Thank you. Ms. Duncanson.
Good afternoon. I'm Kristen Weeks Duncanson from Mapleton, Minnesota. I am a farmer producer. I'm owner and partner in Duncanson Growers, a diversified family farm in southern Minnesota, Blue Earth County.
Mm-hmm. Good. Would both of you like to make some initial comments on why you'd like to be members of the Environmental Quality Board?
As I said, by profession, I'm a hydrogeologist. And quick background, I spent 3 years down in South Florida working with the South Florida Water Management District as part of the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration. And as we develop tools to help decision makers make informed decisions on water management activities, I got to see that from the technical side, but I got to experience it more down there. And as my wife and I returned to Minnesota, it seems a timely time in the state as far as what's, you know, moving forward with the water resources management here. And I'd like to do my part for the state of Minnesota. Regard.
Thank you. As I mentioned earlier, I am part of a farming operation in southern Minnesota. I have an interest in the EQB because of its long-term planning aspect regarding the environment and Minnesota. We not only run a business that involves the delicate natural resources that we have been provided, but also we are long-term and permanent citizens of the state and enjoy both the recreational as well as the opportunity to do what we do in ag business here. I have a background from Luther College, a BA in political science and communications. So my background is not scientific at all, but rather as a citizen, truly a citizen of the state.
What would you both change or improve about the EQB?
Well,
Mr. Tomlinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As experiencing the meetings, well, we had our first meeting last week, and I think the communication, the interagency communication, is becoming, it's coming to the forefront. There's a perception that there may be a lack of communication, And I think the EQB is in a good place to coordinate that or facilitate that. I guess I would like to see that forward.
Ms. Duncanson?
As Mr. Tomlinson mentioned, not only the communication portion, but the data sharing. And granted, we've only, Eric and I have only been through the last 2 or 3 months, but our first indication in briefing books says that there's some opportunity for data sharing amongst the agencies that would really enhance the EQB's work.
For example?
It's my understanding, albeit we've only been there a few months, that some of the systems don't quite speak to each other yet of a technical nature, and so that those systems could be improved. And there's an inherent responsibility in government to look at better ways of doing things, especially when it comes to sharing data.
Like, what are some data that you would like shared with the EQB, and what are some data the EQB collects that you'd like to see shared with other agencies?
In my very brief time at the EQB, it seems that there has been the presentations we've heard seem to indicate that data regarding testing of groundwater and other projects that the University of Minnesota have been involved in, and some of the MPCA as well as other agencies haven't been able to coordinate and have a good website where people can go to get information quickly and in a layperson's terms. Now, granted, my experience is only a couple of months and one full board meeting, but from the early indications, that's an issue that needs a little bit of work for the EQB.
What are both of your views on the EQB's permitting process? Would you continue it as is? Would you improve on it? Would you desire to have the EQB involved in more permitting or less permitting?
Well, as we heard in our last meeting, there is motion or movement towards kind of forming environmental assessment worksheets towards specific industries to kind of help expedite the environmental review portion. As far as permitting, Commissioner McElroy expressed a view that I tend to agree with, that looking at environmental review is just a piece of the long permitting process. I think coming to solving that problem, working with agencies, and I think better communication can help expedite that.
Having been involved in a business that has gone through the permitting process when it's come to some agriculture entities, there's always room for improvement. I think we, as a group, should look at opportunities, but I would be remiss in saying that I have all that information. I haven't been on the EQB long enough to really do an in-depth look at the permitting process and some of the stumbling blocks beyond my industry. So I would be premature in making a definitive answer on that.
I understand that. You bring a specific perspective because of your industry. Give us your experience.
Our experience has been, to be quite honest, somewhat burdensome. It's a long process, and that's not a bad thing always, but one needs to keep that in mind, especially with the seasonality here in Minnesota. You need to plan ahead, otherwise, because you cannot fix a ditch in the middle of February. So, or start a project. So it's a bit burdensome, but not always is that such a bad thing. It's a process that needs to be, I think, better publicized to people in my industry on how it actually works, and so they're sure that they have all the proper documentation and go through the process. The process is not without some stumbling blocks, but that goes with any process when you're coming into doing something new in business.
Do you recall when you were working on your farms, Did you ever have to apply for a permit?
Yes.
Do you recall how many different agencies you had to apply to for a permit for one single project?
The one that comes to mind that we did about 10 years ago were perhaps two or three, but well laid out by the regional MPCA officer as to what we were to do and when and what documentation was needed. I don't mind telling you that the one we did 14 years ago was very contested by the neighborhood, and that was before the legislature had gone through that process and put together where we are today, too. So I have some horror stories about trying to build a new nursery, hog nursery, 14 years ago. But that has gotten better, and the legislature did a good job in revising some of that feedlot legislation.
Have you had to, do you have to have a NPDES permit?
Yes.
Okay. But as a farm, do you do a lot of discharging?
Not anymore. Yeah. I should revise that, Mr. Chairman, and say that we are currently without cattle in our feedlot, so we are not, it's an idle feedlot at this point, but we still keep the permit current.
Is that a requirement to keep it current?
Our choice.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
What I'm interested in this discussion about the permitting process and making it meaningful in the context of what the goal of it is, as opposed to being informed. You're talking about that you're well informed, people tell you what you have to do, and so it makes it easier as things get better to comply with the requirements. But my interest is in whether or not what we have in place as a process is meaningful, or if it's just procedural and complicated. And it may be even put in place to make it more difficult than we need it to be in order to achieve the outcome or the goal of environmental protection. Can you? I'm thinking that I'm looking for people who are able to introduce challenges about that, is that you justify on the basis of the goal of environmental protection what it is that we're asking to be done.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon, I think the process is meaningful. In the last, and Senator Dill can attest to this, we've gone through a lot of changes in that process, and I do think it's a meaningful process, and I think there's adequate citizen input at all different levels of the process, too, whether it be the local township, the county, and the state level. But every process always needs to be reviewed, and it's an inherent responsibility of government to make sure we're doing the best job we possibly can.
And just one more follow-up.
Mr. Tomlinson, do you have a response?
Oh, thank you.
I think by working, communicating between agencies and permitting agencies, I think that's where, a lot of that breakdown may occur, and that's, causes the process to be drawn out. Keeping the public involved, that's, I think, one of the biggest concerns, is allowing for enough public involvement, which I think keeping the public involved makes it a meaningful process. To get feedback, although you sifting through comments during that public comment period, kind of an arduous task, but I think it's a part of the process that's necessary.
Follow up.
I'm understanding the answers. I guess I'm hearing in the various perspectives about the permitting process, however, that there is, we wouldn't be discussing this if there wasn't serious concern about the length of the permitting process and the complexity of it and its impact on the ability to move forward in a timely way. So it's in contrast to what you're saying, where you think it is reasonable, or your experience at least has been that it's reasonable. So I'm hearing that there's a challenge to that I'm hoping is fairly and thoroughly analyzed without losing the overall goal of the environmental review.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon.
Duncanson.
I believe that in with my experience, it's been a good process. It is not without expense and time. However, I too have heard from other industries that the process should be looked at quite again and to make sure that it is doing what it is intended to be without being burdensome.
Further questions? Senator Kilash.
Ms. Duncanson, you're coming from the agriculture community, and I'm curious if there's agenda or I don't mean agenda, but a movement within that to talk about these issues or to try to streamline them for agriculture and what could be done to help improve the process for farmers getting.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kilash, it is not my agenda, nor am I aware of an agenda that has been put forth regarding agriculture. It is my intention to serve on the board and look at the entire process. One of the things that attracts me to the EQB is that it is long-term planning for Minnesota's environmental processing.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Duncanson, it's been a little while since I've read the environmental quality statute, but is there a requirement on there that there be a farmer on that board?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator, I believe there is not a requirement. However, I surfaced with an interest. It just so happens I'm a farmer from southern Minnesota.
Okay. Chairman, I think that's probably what I was thinking of then is the Citizens Board for the Pollution Control Agency. I think on that board there's a requirement that there be a person with agricultural background in that.
As well as the Clean Water Council. Yes,
that's right.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, I have other interests too.
All right. So if there's any other...
I'll move them if you want.
So Senator Fredrickson will move that the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources recommend that the Senate confirm Eric Tomlinson and Kristen Duncanson as citizen members of the Environmental Quality Board. Discussion or any further questions for the two members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you. Good luck.
Next person on the agenda is Randy Kramer, Chair of the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Randy Kramer. I'm a, for the record, chair of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And I'm currently serving as chair, and I live on a farm with my wife and family on a diversified farm also in Renville County, which is hometown of Bird Island, Minnesota, which is 100 miles west of the Twin City area. I raise corn, soybeans, sugar beets, peas, and sweet corn. Do not have any livestock. Wasn't livestock until about 5 years ago, and things went south, so the livestock also went. I am a citizen member on the board of 20. Board is now made up of 20 members. And as chair, I also sit on the EQB board by statute. It gives me great opportunity to serve with other state agencies, commissioners, and individuals that are appointed by the governor to the board. My interest in the Bowser board was to represent the almost 80% of the private landowners to reach a balance and achieve a balance throughout the state between the environment and the private interest and landowners of the state. My duty as board chair is to help set policy, hire and fire the executive director, preside at the meetings, and as I like to call it, facilitate the meetings. And it gives me a great honor that I am able to chair that board, and I'd ask for your support in confirmation today. Thank you.
Mr. Kramer, what do you see as your vision for the future of Bowser?
Mr.
Particularly
Chairman.
Particularly given the new legacy amendment.
Mr. Chairman and members, I see us as going in the upward direction, I'm hoping. I know it's a challenge in the budget. We've had great experiences with the partnership with the RIM WRP that we've had in the phase one and now phase two. That's been a great program. It's been a great asset to the state. We've got some funding from the Legacy Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and we appreciate that. I see us as going in the right direction, I'm hoping, but of course we have to be realist, and with the state's budget woes, I know that we are taking a hit this year, and we have on our grants, also on our operations. So I'm hoping that we can maintain in this time period, and from there start and continue on our projects.
Mr. Kramer, I'm concerned that Bowser has not been requesting more dollars for Reinvest in Minnesota from the Clean Water Fund of the Outdoor Legacy Amendment. There are four funds in the Outdoor Legacy Amendment, not just the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the Lasard Council. There's four. There's the Clean Water Fund, which RIM has a direct impact on. There's even there's a Parks Fund. I don't know what the eligibility is in there. And there's even a Arts and Culture Fund. But I'm particularly concerned that Bowser is only seeking dollars for RIM from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. How can we change that?
Mr. Chair, I think that I feel that we were using with the Clean Water Fund, partnering through our other LGUs and requesting dollars. We're doing other projects and maintaining our grants. And so I think it's a balancing act, the way I see it, trying to do the RIM WRP, and I agree with you. There's federal dollars that we could be obtaining if we could get more state funding. But I think we also have to balance that with the other projects and the clean water projects that we're doing with our partners and around the state, through the state, and in specific the soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts, and so forth. So I agree with you, but I think that it's kind of a juggling act and trying to share the dollars so that they're not going in one direction.
So next year, if given the juggling act, next year Bowser will not be seeking dollars from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, but it will be seeking dollars from the Clean Water Fund in the spirit of that juggling act?
Mr. Chairman, I can't answer that question. Okay. I'm not sure.
Well, please register my concerns.
I will do that.
We had a discussion earlier with one of the confirmees of the Outdoor Heritage Council, and the question was brought up about gray areas, and that's a very fair point. One of the gray areas of between the funds is RIM, the other being aquatic management areas. That is not the responsibility of just one fund and not just one constitutional amendment to fund those programs. And RIM fits squarely within that gray area, and as such, it ought to be shared amongst the funds. I think the one thing the legislature has done this year is done its job in the bonding bill in funding RIM. I think we did yeoman's work, and Mr. Jaski is a great advocate for that. But I'm getting increasingly concerned that because there's a more established, predictable process for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, that is the only fund that various entities go to. It's not their fault that they're efficient and accountable. And so the burden shouldn't just fall on them because of that. So I hope you bring that to the board, Mr. Kramer, because the Clean Water Fund, and we heard extensive testimony from Bowser last session that Reinvest in Minnesota, those buffer strips are amongst the only tools that actually clean water. That was the whole IBI index that we heard testimony on, and provides jobs too. So I think that we need to make sure that the burden is shared. Those are just my feelings. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Kind of on a related but different point, thinking about the buffer strips, and that's a lot of what Bowser does, is implement those kinds of programs to put riparian buffers along different waterways. And so I don't know, and you're, Mr. Chair, you cited the IBI numbers, and they, I guess, are improving somewhat. I do know, I saw some data yesterday about the Minnesota River that shows that phosphorus and nitrates and sediment are steadily continuing to increase into the Minnesota River. And my question, I guess, is, I'm trying to put this into a question, how can Bowser and the local delivery programs that you have do a better job of having outcomes that really change the protection of the waters? I mean, I think we're doing a lot of land protection around the state. We put a lot of money into that in the last few years. But if we're not, I mean, and the Minnesota River is just one example, but if we're not seeing changes in the overall non-point sources that are going into those rivers, then are we really making an impact? Are we making a difference? And how can we do things better so that we do make a difference in the quality of those rivers?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I think that we are making a difference, and we're doing it through the local government units and SWCDs, but it's a long process. Now, I think that education is one of them, and I told you that I am a farmer, and so our water does drain to the Minnesota River. We are using buffers. We have what we call the Hawk Creek Watershed District out there, which is on the west end of Renville County and runs through Chippewa and runs into the Minnesota River, which is a big project. That's being done through education, through buffers, through, you know, just basically studies, water quality studies, different things like that. So I would beg to differ. I think we are making a difference on the state's waters, and it's a long-term process. And I, you know, you can all attest that the money we're spending on it, and so I, you know, again, we come back down to a balancing act of how much funds we have to go to the projects, and so we can come up with studies, or we can show examples where we've done great things, but we also, there's a lot more work to do. I'll be the first to tell you that, and so that's why it's an ongoing process. And I have not seen that study that you indicated on the Minnesota River, but the ones that I was seeing, I thought we were going in the right direction.
Mr. Chair, to follow up on that, the numbers that I saw were just some data that was presented during the TMDL process for the Minnesota River, and it just shows the trends are going in the wrong direction across the Minnesota River from, you know, upstream to downstream. And I think maybe we need to be going beyond buffers somewhat, because, and I'm not sure if this is even in your purview, because if we start talking about tiles that go underneath buffers, I think there are ways to drain the land but reduce the amount of big flows that come through those tiles. I mean, there's ways to do it that are better and not so much better. And I don't know if that's something that the SWCDs are working on, too, because it seems to me you have to do that at the same time. If you have the buffer, but then you put tiling under it and it's just rushing all the water out, I think there's other ways that you can change on-the-ground practices. You're a farmer. You know this way better than I do. But there's ways to do it that will reduce the amount of runoff in addition to buffers. Is that part of what your mission is, and you think we're making progress in that area?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I feel we're making progress, and your point is that we've done controlled drainage demonstrations. We have that on the ground projects now that we're doing, but it's something that's been done in the last couple of years. We're doing that in partnerships with the Department of Ag through the clean water funding, other sources of revenue. And we're looking at that. We're looking at turbidity, open intakes. We're using rock intakes instead. That's all being done, and that was some of the things that are being done with the Hawk Creek project and other projects and partners that we're working with is to try to do things like that. But that all comes at an education, because, you know, the private lands that we represent, and we're, as Bowser, you know, we can't force some of them, so we almost have to use the carrot to force individuals sometimes to take a project or do a project, and then it becomes a learning process. So that's where I was going with the education.
And Mr. Chair, I guess the final point, I agree with what you said, and it's, but are we, through education and getting people, once they understand there's options and they know what they are and they may have an incentive to use those to change something, is that going to get us there? Is that going to get to where we need to go ultimately? Do you think that's going to cover enough of our water protection efforts that we're really going to get the job done, or are we going to have to be tougher and, you know, put stricter regulations in place? Do you think we can get there through education and voluntary incentives?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I don't know if I can answer that truthfully. I would hope we could, because I don't like the hammer approach, and I think that, you know, that I guess when you do that, now you've got two sides that are fighting, and you don't get good results. And so I would hope we could. I'm not sure that we can. I think that it's an ongoing process, and then you have to ask yourself how much money and how big of a carrot can you dangle there to try to get projects done. So sometimes just the by threatening or being controversial, then I think that you now all of a sudden you start butting heads with private landowners, and then we get into, you know, a big mess, and we don't really want to do that. So I think that it's better to do it through education, do it through the delivery of programs through our LGUs, and having the from the townships to the counties, and the SWCDs, watershed districts, all working together to achieve the same goal. And I think that's the first process.
To be fair, Bowser is the agency that we've designated to be the carrot. And we have other agencies that we designate to be more regulatory. And one thing that I have said in the past is that since I've come to know Bowser more and more, I've continued to be impressed with how nimble your agency is and how quickly you all could get on the ground, work with landowners, and not only landowners but other agencies, and coordinate an effective solution. There's a lot to be proud of there, and my view, I think we in the legislature knew we need to keep it that way by not requiring report upon report upon report from your agency on every little thing that you're doing, unless we get wind of an actual problem. Obviously, audits are important. We need to know where taxpayer money is going, but we want to keep you and your agency out of the office as much as possible, and in the field working with landowners. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Kramer. I have a comment and then a question. Finish it with a question, if I can. I too share the comments that the Chair conveyed to you with regards to the Sam's Outdoor Heritage funding. I sit on that board, and it's one of our concerns, and I wish you would carry that back to your board. And the other question that I have is, you're the chair. How does that come about? Maybe you're not the one to ask the question, but I will. Are you put in that position, voted into that position, or how does it come about?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it's appointed by the governor. The chair is chosen by the governor. The vice chair is chosen by the body of the individuals on the board.
Together. Okay. Thank you.
Someone else have their hand up? Mr. Kramer, will you also take it back to your board to consider Bowser getting more involved in aquatic management areas?
Senator, I will do that.
Thank you.
Chairman, I would move that Mr. Kramer be confirmed as a member of the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Senator Frederickson moves that the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources recommend that the Senate confirm Randy Kramer as chair of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Kramer.
Look forward
to working with you.
Mr. Chairman, members.
Okay. Last but not least on the agenda is confirmation of Norm Moody, citizen member of the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourselves.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Did you bring enough for everyone, Mr. Moody?
Enough. Enough, what would that be?
Whatever you have there.
What does that look like?
It looks like wood.
I look at that, and that looks to me like 1 gallon of propane.
Okay.
And I'll explain that later.
Okay, great. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. I'm Norm Moody. I'm retired. I was the land commissioner in Cass County. I think you have copies of my resume, so you can look at my sordid history. I have a degree in wildlife management. I have a degree in forestry. I've got a fairly substantial background in agriculture. The only thing I didn't put in there is my military background. I spent 3 years as a counterintelligence agent back in the early 70s. I don't know what else you want to know about me. And with regards to that, I'm a citizen appointee on the LCCMR. It's been most enjoyable. Some of the background I'd bring that I think is effective is all my work in land asset management, my forest ecology, the integration of wildlife into land management. I could keep talking, but I'll open it up to questions.
Tell us about your experience on the LCCMR so far and what you foresee for the future of the LCCMR.
When I was appointed, I asked the question about how much time would this involve, and they said about 2 days a month. Well, if you're really going to do the job as a citizen member, and I've seen it from the legislators, you better be thinking about 4 to 5 days a month. But the thing is, it's really enjoyable. It's like sitting in an intense graduate seminar each time you go to one of those meetings. And it is just that much fun. You learn, you get to have input, and it's just a good group of people to spend time with and go through these proposals. So it's very enjoyable. The staff is very competent. They have things organized. So it's incumbent on us as citizen commissioners, we better do the background work and be ready. You don't want to go to one of those meetings unprepared, because the people around that table will pick up on it very quickly. You don't want that to happen. I enjoyed the process. It does get somewhat taxing, but there's a lot of give and take, and I think the final product that comes out and gets presented for approval is a very good product.
What do you see the future role of the LCCMR given the new outdoor legacy amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I think what I see is that they're complementary. There's a synergy there. Much of what we deal with is at the front end, be it the research or the pilot projects, because of the amount of funding that we deal with, that can then go forward and help them with their other project proposals where they go from, some of the major funding. So there's a synergy there. I think we'll see a lot of people will come first to the LCCMR to get that base amount of funding to get things going, to prove that it really does work. And then you go to the LCCMR and go for the deeper pocket. That's how I see it functioning. And some of ours is more focused on the research end of it. I do see that, and I accept that. Enjoy it.
Senator Saxog.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't have a lot of questions for Norm, but I've had the privilege of watching him as land commissioner in Cass County for many years, and for those of you that don't know about Cass County, it's one of those counties that the northern half of it many beautiful lakes, Leech Lake, Winnie, the Chippewa Natural Forest, and the southern half of the county has Gull Lake in it, and the whitefish chain, and a lot of heavy recreational activity. So I watched him take a very challenging situation in the managing of natural resources and become quite innovative. And we're Norm and I crossed paths. The most is in forest management. He took on a real challenge because Potlatch was actually one of the first companies that decided to fragment its large holdings, and he's he kind of came up with some of the groundbreaking ideas that we're using right now to make our forests whole and productive and accessible. So I've also watched him consolidate lands. Some of the things we're doing at the state now in exchanging and fee purchase of lands are because of what Norm has done in Cass County. So I think we couldn't find a better guy to be thinking up ideas for management and the study of natural resources, and certainly would be a privilege to move his confirmation when that time comes.
Mayor Dill?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Moody, I'm looking at your publications, and I see you have a publication where you're estimation of browse by size classes for snowshoe hares. Was that important research?
Just Moody. Chairman Senator Dale, yes, and it's the perfect example because it led right to this. Guess what? It's energy. I was determining the amount of calories or BTUs, however you want to look at it, in that browse. And the browse.
Moody, what's a browse?
Browse species would be like willow, it could be alder, okay. Red osier dogwood. All these species, yeah, shrubs. Well, on top of this, let me explain this. This is a gallon of propane. If I had one of my little bales of willow or red osier dogwood, I would bring you a little bit bigger bundle, but it still would be a gallon of propane. The energy is dependent on the weight, the cellulose. We will burn this in the gasifier at Deep Portage. We put in gasifiers this summer. We have shut off our propane furnaces. We are burning wood fiber. And it's energy. Whether it's browse for snowshoe hare, which then feed bobcats or lynx, what have you, It's all interrelated. They all fit. Let me key in on this a little bit. When you see that pulp truck going down the road and you see 10, 11 cords of aspen or jack pine or what have you, I don't see that anymore. I see a 2,000-gallon tank of propane going down the road. We're sitting on an unbelievable amount of energy in the state of Minnesota, and it's just the innovation that we need to put into it to make it work. And there's a tremendous return on this investment. We're cutting our costs dramatically, and with some funding that's coming from LCMR, and I didn't lobby for this, I had to recuse myself. That's the beauty. I could sit back, not just a regular person, and watch the process work. But we will be improving on this again, and we will no longer be doing night burning after we make the improvements this summer of putting in more storage. We're going to add about 10,000 gallons of storage, so we'll burn our gasifier heavy during the day, store all that heat in our water storage, and pull off that at night, so it saves us labor costs and burning. You can tell I get pretty excited about this stuff.
Where are you doing that?
This is at Deep Portage.
Okay.
Yes. And it's wildlife. It's the same thing. I heard some of the discussion about ecology versus wildlife. Well, let me put it this way. I'm a forest resource manager. if this person here is a member of the Sierra Club, I'm going to go onto his forest land and I'm going to set up my forest management for goldwing warblers. And I will provide him with a lot of goldwing warblers, which is a species that's been in decline in this area. But we can really bring them back. Now, if you're with the Ruffed Grouse Society, I'm going to write a plan for you that's going to be really good for ruffed grouse. And you know what? It's the same plan. You know, it's semantics. It's what's good for wildlife is good for the forest industry, is good for the economy. Let me add on to this one other thing, since we're burning our local energy, you know, our local propane. We can provide wildlife habitat. We can provide jobs into the local economy. In this particular situation, we have some hard-to-employ people that are putting up wood for this, so they're making a living, and we can cut our costs all at the same time. So you can do it everything at once. It all fits together.
Mr. Moody, what's your understanding of the types of projects that the LCCMR funded prior to the passage of the Outdoor Legacy Amendment?
I can go way back to, let's go back here, I think as far as I can, back into 1969, I worked for the DNR, be there someplace, yeah, 1968, on a big game research project. It was funded by the LCMR. So I've come full circle in something over 30 years. So that was my first knowledge of LCMR. It was before it became the LCCMR. And I have applied numerous times to the LCMR and did get funding for the Land Asset Management Program prior to retirement. And that was prior to the LCCMR. So I was familiar with some of the projects.
Has the LCCMR and the LCMR prior to that primarily funded research?
My understanding that was that it was a lot of it was research back then, because the project I was on was research, and that was my familiarity with it. But now I'm becoming more familiar with other projects that in some cases were acquisitions. And basically it seems to follow the statutory language that, you know, if it protects, conserves, preserves natural resources, it fits. Put a proposal in. And I especially like the category, the innovative ones. Those are the most interesting.
Should the LCMR, LCCMR reduce any of those traditional sources of funding prior to the Outdoor Legacy Amendment, now that we have things like the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Clean Water Fund and parks and even some of those arts and culture items?
Right. You know, again, this would be an opinion. I would like to see the proposals and let that group of people work through it. And yes, there may be some proposals that some of us think really don't fit. But okay, let's sit around the table and prepare to do battle. I enjoy that part of it, because somebody may have a totally different slant on a proposal than what I have. And as much as I like winning, sometimes I really enjoy getting beat because somebody shows me a different way and says, you know, have you ever looked at it this way? And I go, oh, crap, no, I hadn't. No.
I'm just asking for your point of view.
Yeah, my point of view is I'd like to keep the LCCMR as open as possible. And
if that means reducing some other traditional sources because we have other funds like the Outdoor Legacy, Outdoor Heritage Fund, and others, that would be okay?
I hate to see any reductions in funding when it comes to natural resources, but I do understand that there are other needs out there other than what I particularly support. So I can be somewhat flexible. Let me go back to the example of the ATV issue. I sat at this exact table, and the pro-ATV people were on one side, and the anti-ATV people were on the other side. And, of course, they thought I was, of course, the anti-ATV people thought I was the work of the devil because of my position, and the pro-ATV people didn't think I was probably even that high, when I had to say, well, I don't support or oppose either. I'm neutral. What I do is I manage resources. So there's enough resource out there for all of us. Let's make it work. So I can be somewhat neutral. I hate to be...
Mr. Moody, I think you're giving yourself off as a bit of a neutral party when, in fact, you have a vote on the commission, and you are going to have to vote a certain way. And so I'm just asking you what your opinion is. How have you voted? What have you supported? What do you support, especially in the future?
I do support. I have some strong, I guess I have a bent towards acquisition in some cases, because sometimes that's a better way of doing business. Use an example. Sometimes acquisition doesn't mean that you keep the land. What you're trying to do is complete a job. And if the job, let's use waters. We were just talking about waters. There's an issue of waters on some of our ag lands, and some of those lands that are the most sensitive, maybe we should be moving in and buying those lands, deed enhancing them, that is, putting in the grass water ways, putting in some actual water retention. Oh, by the way, we do have a project like that that we did fund, to keep that water on the land at a particular time, but we may turn right around and then sell the land with that enhancement on it. That means that there's deed restrictions. There are things now you can't do as a farmer, but they're not things that are really going to preclude you from making a living. It's just that now you can't rush that water down the river with all those nutrients in it and degrade the river. And by the way, you can't flood the people down in the town that are farther down south. So there are projects you can do where you're using acquisition, but you're not going to keep the land. It's just a different way of doing business. So in that case, I'm for the acquisition project. But then there may be a research project, which basically I'm going to have some research done to prove that what I'm saying is going to work is going to work.
Yes. And you may have gathered this is a critical point for me. So I guess I'll go back to my original question. Should the LCCMR reduce its traditional sources of funding? Because we have additional sources now, like the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
I'd have to say no, that you wouldn't reduce what you're doing. You'd be looking at it on a project-by-project basis. And there may be a project that is traditional that isn't going to get funded through the Lessard Group. That LCCMR.
I didn't catch that part. Could you just repeat that statement?
All right, there may be, instead of saying, no, we aren't going to fund this because this traditional source of funds that we have provided for this traditional activity or whatever you want to call it, we're going to not do this because Lessard is there. I don't think we should be saying that because Lessard may not fund it either. I mean, these people are going to maybe four or five different funding sources, and they're looking for the one that has the people that believe in what they're proposing and will provide them the funding. Is that making
helps
clear? Okay. I mean, I really like to see the proposals and make up my mind on the individual proposal. And I might say this is a really great project, and the people on the Lessard Commission might say, eh, it doesn't do anything for
us. Just that we have a new wrinkle
yes.
in the matter.
Yes.
It's not a wrinkle to me, but it's a new matter. And we funded, this was before you were appointed, but we funded, the LCMR funded the Forest Legacy Program. Buying easements. There was a higher dollar amount given to the Habitat Corridors Partnership, the Metro Corridors Partnership.
even some parks and trails. And I'm getting worried that everyone's seeing this new, stable, and accountable source of funding in the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and predictable, as the new go-to, and so as an excuse to do something else, something different, debatable discussion, but not less in my view.
Senator, no, I think
and you're of course entitled to your view, but I just wanted to make sure that we were clear on it.
No. Senator, I should have asked for an example. That would be a perfect example. We'd say now, well, Lessard can handle all the forest legacy work up in northern Minnesota, and I would say absolutely not. You think we've tapped that well dry? There is more innovation waiting to come forward out there of maybe differing ways of accomplishing what we want out of forest legacy, and LCCMR should be maybe the first place they would come to, because we might be the real innovators. Whereas they may pick up, Lessard may pick up on the way things have been done in the past, but aren't willing to try something new. And we have a smaller amount to deal with in terms of funds, but we maybe don't need a lot of funds to get something going.
See, I like that potential of the two funds complementing one another. Is, yes, it could be what you just said. It could be continuing to fund the traditional source at the LCMR for Forest Legacy, for example, or Habitat Corridors, but perhaps look at it a different way, a slightly different way. Not that it takes away from the mission of that program to create a corridor of habitat, but maybe in a slightly different way where we can maybe innovate on allowing grazing, for example, on a particular body. But I'm just of my own view. I don't support reducing those. And that's where I'm coming from. Senator Saxon?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just going to say, my experience with Mr. Moody is that he's a problem solver. And so what we've thrown up to, or you've thrown up to him, you know, there are some problems, but those are his gifts, and I think he'll do quite well.
Agreed. Any other discussion? If not, Senator Saxon moves that the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources recommend that the Senate confirm Norman Moody as a citizen member of the Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources. Discussion or any other further comments or questions for Mr. Moody? Thank you for bringing your propane. And all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Committee is adjourned.